Hello, welcome back to Talking Europe. We'll work with any US president to develop transatlantic ties. That's the politically correct line that you'll hear from EU leaders. But there's little doubt that many of them will be privately relieved if Kamala Harris wins the US election on November the 5th. She's drawn a clear line from her opponent, former President Donald Trump, on US engagement with the world and particularly on support for Ukraine. But it's not as if the current Biden-Harris administration has always been smooth for Europe. Think of the US Inflation Reduction Act or Biden's AUKUS pact with the UK and Australia. And if Donald Trump does defeat Harris in November, could the EU still work out some kind of arrangement with him? Well, to discuss all these issues, I'm joined by German MEP Alexandra Geyser from the Group of the Greens. Welcome to you. And I'm also pleased to welcome Portuguese MEP António Tanger Correia from Patriots for Europe. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Both of you are on the delegation for relations with the United States. So, Alexandra Geyser, from your point of view, how do you view these last 5 years of the Biden-Harris administration for Europe?
Well, I think the last 5 years have been characterized by Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. That has been the dominating issue. And I think we have been very happy to be able to count on the unconditional support of the Biden administration for Ukraine. And that also means an unconditional support for Europe's democracy and freedom. So I have a very positive look on those 5 years.
And the same question to you.
I agree. But a little bit erratic, I would say. We know the interest of the Biden family in Ukraine, and I think that was a small problem. Where I'm coming from Portugal, my party is the absolutely staunch supporter and the Portuguese of Ukraine. So I think that we saw the Biden administration as a bit, as I told you, erratic, and sometimes going on a good direction, the other times not on such a good direction. And that was causing a little bit of ups and downs in this relationship.
What do you mean by erratic?
It means sometimes, we did not understand if it was money or guns or money, and what for. What would be the destination of that help that the American administration was given? Was it going to be used?
On Ukraine, you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. Alexandra Geyser, how do you view a possible Harris presidency? Do you think it would be a little bit different from Joe Biden if she wins? What are the nuances for you? Or are they significant even?
Well, we don't know that yet, but yeah. She certainly is a different person. She's a person of color. She's a woman. She is younger than Biden. So I think her presidency will be different. But she has also shown earlier in her career that doesn't necessarily condition what she does. So I think she will be a president who stands for the whole of America and will have a different way to bring to serve the American people. I think she will be very open to work with Europe. And I'm very much looking forward on her very clear stance towards women's rights, towards abortion rights, which we are seeing threatened all over the globe. So I think this is something all of Europe can really look forward to, and in particular the women.
You both mentioned Ukraine, and obviously that is the key concern for the EU when it comes to who's going to win November in America. Of course, there's also the whole trade issue between the EU and the US, which hopefully we'll get into as well. But first, let's take a listen to Donald Trump and Kamala Harris talking about their respective positions on Ukraine.
The number of people dying in the Ukraine-Russia war is a far greater number than anybody knows. And Biden has done nothing about it. He hasn't even spoken to Putin in over a year. He'd known nothing about it. And this is a war that has to end, and we're going to get that war ended. I'm going to try, and I think I can, get it ended as president-elect. In other words, before I even take over the White House.
He would surrender. He would have Ukraine surrender its fight against an aggressor, violating its sovereignty. If Donald Trump were president, Vladimir Putin will be sitting in Kyiv.
António Tanger Correia, when Donald Trump talks about, I'm going to sort this out in 24 hours. He doesn't really seem to explain how, beyond saying that he has a good relationship with everybody, with Zelensky and Putin. Are you convinced by this?
Well, 24 hours, I think, is a bit extreme, isn't it? What the AI really means that he considers himself able to do it. I don't know. The conflict is deeply rooted now. I'm curious how he could move things into that direction. But Trump has always surprised us in international arena. He just had Kim Jong-il quiet down.
Kim Jong-un.
I'm still from the old timers, you know.
You're a diplomacy diplomat from the Portuguese
foreign
ministry.
I was accredited to North Korea in the time of Kim Il-sung.
Right, okay.
So that was old times. So he has surprised us because he's an American. He did not provoke wars, on the contrary. And he was very smart, in my opinion, because he discovered the way. Against the usual way of the American presidency, he found a way of selling weapons without making wars. So I'm very interested and curious how can he solve it.
Are you curious or rather dreading what's going to happen on Ukraine if he wins?
I am dreading what's going to happen to the Ukrainian if he wins, because the only way we know we started this war, and that is Putin, and we know who is continuing this war, and that is also Putin. So the only person who can really stop that war is Putin. If Trump promises to stop it in a very short time span, that means surrender. He will force Ukraine to surrender. And that means forcing Ukraine to give up part of its territory, almost a quarter of its territory. And we know what happens to the people in those territories. I have been to Bucha and I have been to Irpin and I have spoken to the people. We know that Russia, Putin's troops have committed war crimes there, and I've spoken to the people who have told me about it with horror, how their neighbors had been shot from behind, how the women had been raped in the streets by Russian troops. This is what Putin wants to do to the Ukraine, and we can't tolerate that. So I really hope for Kamala Harris to win.
Trump also says if Putin doesn't come to negotiate on Trump's supposed deal, then Trump is going to give the Ukrainians a lot. Does that sound credible to you?
It sounds like a threat to me. I mean, it really...
But it's not a threat against Putin, really, in reality, you don't think? I mean, given the balance of power militarily.
Well, I think what Putin wants to do is to have negotiations and to freeze the situation in order to keep building up troops and military capacity in order to be able to threaten NATO borders. I mean, this is what we're really talking about. We're speaking about Ukraine and the Ukrainian people, but we're also speaking about our own security that was jeopardized with Trump president of the U.S.
So, Anthony, do you think territorial concessions to Russia by Ukraine, they're inevitable if Trump becomes president?
Our position is basically that we stand with Ukraine, so whatever the Ukrainians decide in their free will, it's good for us. I don't take a future vision of conceding or not conceding territories. Yeah. That's something that the Ukrainians have to negotiate by themselves.
But we can't forget the pressure that Trump is implying he would put on the Ukrainians.
Well, yeah, because you always put pressure on the weaker side. It's a basic of international relations. I mean, everybody knows that. So if he will try a deal, we'll try a deal first with Ukrainians and then we'll talk to Putin, it's my guess.
Mm. Yeah.
Alexandra,
putting pressure on the weaker side might be smart for Trump, but it means that we will be the next weak side with Putin building up troops at our borders. That means NATO will be on the weak ones, and especially we in Europe if Trump decides to pull out of NATO and to go with Putin, I think.
Just one quick final theme I want to touch on. So when Trump was president in 2018, he imposed tariffs on EU steel and aluminium. The EU retaliated on part of those tariffs. Do you think this time round, if he becomes president, we're looking at a much bigger trade tension between the EU and the US and much more robust tariff approach by the EU as well?
I think it's going to happen exactly the opposite for two reasons. First reason, the old Trump is not the new Trump. I mean, he's older, but he's newer in his vision. And the second is the evolution of the BRICS and the other bloc. And Trump is very well of that, very well aware of that. And that poses a threat. And China and its allies pose a threat to the United States and to Europe. So this threat is a good reason to have a better relationship and a closer relationship between Europe and the United States of America.
What do you think the risk of that, of a tariff war is, Alexandra?
Well, I also consider China the biggest risk there. You mentioned steel, and we know that China is building up enormous overcapacities in terms of steel, but that is also true for some of the most critical technologies of our times, like batteries, for example, solar panels, and so on. And that is a problem for Europe, and it is the problem for the U.S. So I would wish for a U.S. administration that is ready for a common approach of the European Union and the U.S. in order to avoid this overcapacities and avoid trade war that would damage us both.
Okay, well, lots more we could talk about, but time is always so short on this program, so we'll wrap it up there and thank my two guests, Alexandra Geza and Antonio Tanger Correa. That's all for this episode of Talking Europe. You can find us on the web as well, france24.com, Talking Europe, if you look under talk shows, and of course on all our social media platforms as well. Thanks for watching.